I enjoyed last show where the intro said fuck and then it said, this show contains coarse language.
Thank you for warning me in advance. I just got fired from my shitty job.
Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language. You're listening to the weekly show on Discourse.
Oh yeah, I'm back.
Episode 17, The Apple of Your Eye, with Morgan and Carl.
Yes, we're back. But by we, I don't mean me and Ben, because Ben, once again, is not here. We have a special guest star co-host, Auckland developer and internet guy, and I don't even know what else we can say about your father.
That's true. That's true.
Carl Hello. Von Rando.
Hello. How are you doing?
How are you doing?
Hey, pretty well. Thank you.
Was that an all right intro?
I think that
that's perhaps
that
the worst
it.
Intro I've heard, actually, to be honest.
Hey, shut up.
Yeah.
Who was that? Let me get my windows in order. This episode is a special episode. And by special, I mean I'm going to hate every minute of it. And it's all my fault. This episode is an Apple special, kind of. We've got what I have been characterizing as kind of the New Zealand Apple iPhone developer dream team. And I don't think I'm too far wrong saying that. Carl is, can I say, notorious?
Please.
Notorious Apple developer with very popular iPhone apps. I think prime of them, among them is mobile photos.
They're definitely well-loved.
Camera Plus, yes. That's the big one, amongst others. On the line, we also have Leighton Duncan, senior technology strategist and commentator and the proprietor of development house Polar Bear Farm. What are your big apps?
The biggest one would probably be Record, actually, audio recording tool. But, we've got a bunch of utilities mainly and working on some larger apps right now.
You say we?
It's a small team, me and another developer at the moment. It's been an up and down sort of journey with the size of the company. It's been up to about five and then now back down to two.
And is that just kind of natural attrition, or do you get rid of people when you're not in crunch or something?
Well, there was a bit of a shitstorm sort of a year in with one of the co-founders, and then things kind of dwindled off after that for a bit in the aftermath, and then things picked up a little bit. So,
is that all kind of office politics drama stuff that we should stay really far away from?
Well, I don't care. I can
the co-founder actually was my wife, and she was turning tricks behind my back, as it turns out. I'm not very good in the sack.
Just a friend of 20 years gone.
Oh Jesus, that's no good.
Yeah, good times.
Yeah, I've actually got a new rule, and that's no close friends or intimate partners in businesses, because I've made that mistake before.
I guess I'll be out of here then.
Everyone kind of says that going in, and everyone sort of knows that there's that potential for disaster. But I don't know. It's kind of hard when you're first starting out taking on sort of employees. You want to sort of take on people that you think you trust, and then. That's kind of the best you can do. And if the shit hits the fan, the shit hits the fan.
Well, maybe I should be more specific and say probably I would, you know. I mean, I love working with my friends, I'm sure, but I wouldn't have equal shareholding.
It definitely changes things.
I'd need to have controlling interest, I reckon, because I'm a control freak asshole. This motherfucker likes to be the bossy. Guess who else we've got? We've got, where are you, Leighton? Are you in Christchurch?
I am in Christchurch.
So are you still doing your earthquake reports? I enjoyed those. Yeah, it's too bad that they've petered out, because Christchurch is still mainly standing.
There's still work to do.
Well, our office is still in one piece, just.
What happened to your roof?
Did your chimney go through your roof or something?
One of the walls started peeling away and kind of opened up a massive gap between the roof and the wall, and we had water pissing in.
Wow.
So that's been...
That really sucks. I'm glad that we don't live in a dangerously geologically active volcano field, Carl.
Mm, much smarter, much safer.
On the line from really safe from earthquakes city, Wellington, we also have Dave Frampton, proprietor of Magic Jungle Software, creator of Chopper 2. Was Chopper 2 your big one?
It's just overtaken the first Chopper in downloads. So, it's now the biggest step.
Right. So you mainly make games?
Mostly games. I've made a couple of like proper apps as well. Nothing very popular though. I mean, Chopper's definitely the biggest, biggest thing, and that's obviously a game.
Right. So Leighton has had a variable sized team. How many people do you work with?
Well, I've just got my brother working with me at the moment. Yeah. Despite what Leighton says about not working with friends and family. But that's going pretty well.
But you're the boss, right? Sort of,
yeah.
Right. See, so that's kind of the problem that I have. Right. So you kind of built all the success of it, and then brought your brother in naturally. You built the success of the company off your own back, really, didn't you?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, Chopper, I made that like eight years ago. It was the first version of Chopper for the Mac.
Wow, you can see the iPhone coming, right? Yeah. Even from that distance.
Yeah.
You should have warned Nokia.
Yeah.
Well, you originally tried to make Chopper for Nokia.
What?
Oh, is that not right?
Is that true? Did you make a J2ME Chopper?
No.
120 by 80 pixels? Actually, Carl made a really cool J2ME application called, it was a terminal application, it's SSH client.
Yeah, for Secure Shell.
Oh, that's right. You're a Java nut, aren't you?
And proud of it. That, J2ME was one of the best mobile platforms at the time.
Yeah. What's the best mobile platform now, you Apple iPhone developer guys? I'm sure you can be really unbiased.
You're putting us on the spot a little bit.
Yeah, this is going to be tricky.
It's pretty tricky. I'm not sure.
There's so many different
factors. I'm quite fond of Android, personally.
I like Android as well because I quite like Linux and I like freedom.
I'm kind of a Windows 7 phone series guy.
Yeah. But how would you know that? Have you actually seen one?
No, I've never seen one. No. Oh, no, I have seen one, yeah. Yeah. I've seen one in a presentation.
All right. Yeah. I would have seen one, except regular Discourse co-host and Microsoft MVP and former Windows Phone 7 weenus never, ever used one when he was here. He was always using an iPhone.
Funny.
I knew it.
Yeah, seriously. All right. Well, so we've got the iPhone dream team because I kind of want to talk a little bit about, mobile platforms and stuff. You know, if I wanted to talk broadly about platforms, probably I would have got someone who used Android ever, probably on the show, but I didn't want to do that.
Well, you tried.
Yeah, I tried. No one knew what I was talking about.
But no one knew they had an Android phone.
They just said, I've got a Verizon. What have you got?
Yeah.
I like my thing. It shows me porn when I'm in the toilet. You can't do that on the iPhone, can you? No porn in your apps. But isn't there like a Playboy app?
Who's going to be jumping in to answer that one?
Hey guys, have you all successfully looked at porn on your phones?
I did release an application called Privateer.
Yeah.
Which I tried to tap that market, if I can say it like that. And
Was it approved?
Yeah, it was definitely approved.
So Apple actually approved a porn browser.
It's not a porn browser.
Oh, sorry.
Morgan.
I mean, a privacy enhanced image.
It's a secure internet browser.
Exactly. Yeah. Medical conditions, shopping for a gift for your for your spouse, those kinds of uses.
Yeah, naturally. Mm. And I'm actually
come up with those uses.
But so it really was just a web browser, but it didn't store any logs or anything and kept no cookies.
Yeah, exactly right. Cleared the cookies every time you quit out. And what the beauty of it is for OS 4, I didn't need to do any updates to make it multitasking because if you press the home button, you want it all gone.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Or so I hear.
Right. That's really cool. Big fan. Love your work. So now, how did everyone get into iPhone development? I remember, Carl, that you were working on mobile Flickr, I think it was called at the time, before the App Store was even made available.
Yeah, well, I actually ran into Leighton. This is when we met, wasn't it, Leighton? In 2000?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, Foo Camp.
2008, Foo Camp. It would have been in February. And Leighton had... he's an idiot. He'd taken his iPhone apart and was showing it up at Foo Camp. Our iPhones were all our sort of most prized possessions, and talking about how you could download the Open Toolchain. Is that's what it was called?
Yeah. So at that time there was obviously no tools from Apple or anything like that. So a bunch of people in the jailbreak community had put together toolchains, basically compilers, so that you could write code for the iPhone, compile it, and actually run it on the iPhone before Apple obviously was ready for that. And so I met Carl up at Foo Camp. I'd actually just come back from...
It's Macworld, isn't it?
Yeah, it was Macworld, and we'd just exhibited there our jailbreak apps. And got an invite to Foo, met Carl, set him and John Ballinger up with this tool chain for writing native apps for the iPhone.
Yeah, I bet should probably buy you a drink. I guess I'd had a look at the open tool chain and it was like, this looks too hard. It's going to be, you know, it's going to wreck my machine when I install it because it was a whole lot of command line stuff. But I saw Leighton had done it. I got cracking on that. And I'd just had my first kid at that time, so I was up really late with her. Well, yeah, of course I was up all night looking after her, and so I just decided to while I was up looking after her, just to build apps.
Mm.
It was great.
And look at you now.
Yeah, exactly.
You're on Discourse.
Hey, anyone?
That's the measure of success. I'm going to make you famous,
guys.
I'm going to make you rich, Carl.
We have made it. This is fantastic.
So, Dave, I didn't hear much from you then.
Yeah, well, because I already had Chopper on the Mac, and then so when the iPhone SDK came out, that was when I kind of jumped on. I never dealt with any of the jailbreak stuff. So, yeah, when the SDK came out, I signed up and started porting it.
Wait, so let me get this straight, because this is probably almost a unique story. You made games for an Apple. I didn't think that was even legal. I mean, since when does anyone... I mean, I remember playing Dark Castle back in the dark old days of the 80s, but I didn't know it was that you were actually allowed to make games for Apples.
Yeah, well, there weren't many people doing it when I started. It's certainly changed now, but yeah, I mean, back... That was 2003 when I first sort of started learning development. It was basically because I only had a Mac, so, you know, I wanted to learn to program, so I was making Mac stuff.
So how did you try to distribute Chopper on an Apple desktop?
It was just free. Initially,
but I mean, that doesn't
does, I did make it shareware.
So I mean, what I've seen recently is these kind of these bundles. Now, Keller, what's his name? John, whatever.
Yeah, John
Casasanta.
John Casasanta. For some reason, I wanted to call him Calacanis, but I knew that wasn't right. So John Casasanta has some kind of bundle thing, right? Which I think sometimes
with Mac Heist.
And does that ever have games?
Yeah, I've seen some games.
Indie package. Did you ever get into any of those things, or is that kind of too recent for your Chopper? I'm just very interested to know how. I mean, because I never really thought of an Apple as a game thing. So
yeah, it's never really been great for the mainstream games. I mean, the PC's always had a lot more.
A lot more of everything. That's right. Quality.
Yeah.
Performance.
Stability.
Stability. Absolutely. Mm. This machine.
Oh yeah, it's true. I mean, the Mac's had a lot of really crap ports.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're still getting crap ports because I guess you've got Steam now, right? So you get like Half-Life and
plenty of
8-year-old games. Must be great.
Yeah, I mean, Chopper was never in that league, you know. It was a kind of pretty basic game, and even Chopper 2 to an extent. And so now with the Mac App Store, it's just, you know, it's awesome for Chopper kind of.
You could see where I was going, couldn't you? From a mile away. So you ported to iPhone. You managed to make a pretty popular game there. Where were you in the charts?
Well, the original Chopper peaked at number 2 in the US,
yeah.
Just behind iFart, which was
Jesus. But, you must have been gutted. Because,
yeah.
I mean, so some idiot builds a piece of shit app that plays crappy sound files. Yeah. Meanwhile, you build an app over years to, you know, that plays this game. How did you feel about that? Yeah. Were you just so happy to be in number 2 that you didn't care? Cha-ching.
Well, yeah, it was like Christmas Day or something as well. It was like number 2, and yeah, I was pretty happy.
Yeah.
But you were selling it for more than a dollar, though, weren't you, at that time when it was number 2?
That was a dollar. It got to number 13 at $8, $7.99, initially. Wow. So, yeah, picked at number 13.
Holy shit, you were selling a game for $8 on the iPhone.
Yeah, in the good old days, yeah.
It is hard to believe.
Yeah.
Times have definitely changed.
Dave, what were you doing when the iPhone SDK was announced? What were you doing? What was your day job?
I was contracting at the time, doing Mac development, doing the Te Papa Our Space exhibition. Right. Not single-handedly, of course, but working, you know, on that. Yeah, so it was just evenings and weekends, basically, was the when I was doing the Chopper port to the iPhone.
And what point did you... So that was a contract thing. So when that contract ended, you just decided to... Because you're doing this full-time, aren't you? So you decided to do that then?
I'd already been saving up anyway. I was planning on probably doing Mac shareware development full-time after that contract anyway, so
Cool.
But yeah, I mean, you know, after the success with Chopper on the iPhone, it was, yeah, it's pretty good timing. It worked out pretty well.
All right, and what were you up to with your day job, Latin? It sounds like you got into the Apple stuff really, the iPhone stuff really quickly. So I presumably you were being a developer as your day job?
Yeah, so I sort of played around with a little bit of Mac shareware from, I don't know, about the age of 13. And it never really sort of big commercial development sort of stuff, more hobby sort of development. And I graduated university a year before the iPhone came out and was kind of, I always had a software consulting all through university, sort of writing web apps and sort of enterprisey, internal enterprise database systems and stuff like that. So I'd always kind of played around with the Mac and then saw the iPhone launch and thought this would be the perfect platform to pick up. And yeah, basically as soon as the iPhone was released in the States, imported one, unlocked it, got it running on Vodafone. And then about a month after that, this jailbreak toolchain sort of started coming together and became sort of a usable way to actually create native apps.
So you were always an Apple user?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So I got my first Mac, well, the family got their first Mac when I was about 5. It was a hand-me-down from Dad's work, who he owns a commercial printing business, and they were one of the first in the country to put in Macs and basically a desktop publishing suite.
Let me guess, it was a Lisa.
No, it was actually a Mac Plus. So that was the second Mac ever, well, actually the third Mac ever produced. They'd sort of just come to New Zealand at the time. And I remember we got this computer at home, and first thing I did was pull it to bits to see what was inside it, to see how it worked. And
some things never changed.
Managed to get it back together before Mum and Dad found out.
So that was the difference between us, because I've pulled things to pieces in the past and I've never managed to get them back together, because I always get frustrated at that point where I'm like, surely this should come apart, and so I just keep on applying force or leverage with a screwdriver until it comes apart, and then I see where the, like my mouse, I did that with my Mac mouse and there was a screw underneath the sticker.
Right.
Now I know.
Bastards.
Yeah, bastards.
That old trick.
Yeah, but I repaired it with some Sellotape and some matchsticks. That mouse is still going. I still have it.
But it's an Apple mouse and you kept using it.
Yeah, it's beautiful, man. One button. You can't go wrong.
Was it a hockey puck?
Apple makes such shit.
No, this was from my this is from the mid-90s. So this is a real beige mouse, yeah.
Wow.
And with the mouse button propped up by two matchsticks.
It'll be a serial one. It'll be like a mini Denate or something.
What was that thing called?
It'll be one of those ADB.
ADB, yeah.
Wow.
It's awesome. It's for sale, by the way.
I'll give you nothing for it.
That's the best offer I've got, actually.
No one's going to buy it after the Sellotape story, anyway.
Oh, it comes with a computer.
Yeah, a 90s era Apple, though, right?
Cost me about $6,000 on my student loan.
Crikey,
that's awesome.
Wow. Oh, I put a Mac with my student loan too.
Oh, student loan was so good. You call up, it's like, hey, yeah. I'd like $6,000. Like, cool, that'll be in your account tomorrow. Like, cool.
What the fuck?
Madness. I don't think you can do it quite that way
anymore.
Well,
it wasn't like that in my day.
No, well, yeah, you would have been buying an Intel Mac.
I think the country would have been broke by the time I went through university at that rate.
Yeah. So no one here uses, I mean, so Carl uses PCs at the office because that's serious.
I had to give up the Mac in the OS 9 days because it was stressing me out too much because it crashed.
Right.
You couldn't launch anything without it crashing.
OS 9.
Yeah.
Towards the end of OS 9 was just horrible.
Yeah. I mean, even OS 8, OS 9, I became too stressed out with my computer because you had to save everything before you did anything. You know, if you're launching an application, I wouldn't say it was 50-50, but it felt like it was 50-50 whether it was going to crash or not, at least on my computer. So.
Right. Well, that sucks.
Yeah.
Of course, at the time, the Apple weenuses were all saying it was better than Windows. Clearly, it wasn't.
Yeah, well, it wasn't better than Windows 2000. That's what I switched to Windows 2000.
Oh, God, Windows 2000 was so good.
That thing was, that it was stable. You know, that was, it crashed 3 times a year or something like that. Yeah. And it was always a surprise when it crashed.
I built my mother a machine in like 2001 or something. that runs Windows 2000 to this day, and she still uses it.
Nice.
And it's still stable, nice. But it's a bit
she
slow.
Is responsible for how much of the percentage of global spam?
Well, she uses a modem, so probably not very much.
She receives all this email going, enlarge your penis. She's like, oh, that's just Morgan again. I'll forward this on.
So everyone, aside from me and aside from the aforementioned Windows machine at Carl's office, uses Apple's for your development machines, and you all develop for iPhones. Android is now the biggest platform. What would it take for any of you to build apps for Android? Or have any of you actually built apps for Android?
The only thing that would get me developing for Android was if they produced something which was really, you know, focused on the consumer.
Yeah.
And that's the fundamental problem with Android, is that what are Google's intentions with creating Android? And it's clearly to prop up their advertising, or perpetuate their advertising business. And, I mean, the product is entirely built around selling advertising rather than selling an experience to consumers. And when those two things don't align, that's when the priorities take control and the end user loses out.
Yeah. I think it's fair to say that's definitely, you know, there's definitely a part of Google which is wanting to do that, and that's, you know, with their paid apps versus free apps with advertising kind of lean, it definitely seems to be what they're doing. But I think it's becoming apparent that the user experience people are kind of catching up with, you know, are catching up with what's happening with the OS. But they still seem to be missing even the most simple things that we enjoy on the iPhone, like, you know, nice fluid scrolling.
And I've got to say, I mean, you might say that they're not consumer-focused, but there's a lot of people buying them. There's a lot of consumers buying them. Apple sales last quarter, 2010, 16 million. Android sales, 33 million.
You know what? I think
you look at Symbian, and Symbian's at 30-something million, and it's like, I don't know, this is kind of always my argument, is that Android will always win out on raw numbers like that, because it's, if you look at it from the handsets manufacturer's point of view, their weakness has always been software.
Yeah.
Motorola used to create awesome hardware, but their software was just absolute shit.
Yeah.
And if they can stop pouring resources into their software divisions and then rely on Google to supply that for them, it's kind of a no-brainer for them to adopt.
And Motorola are still responsible for some of the worst experiences with Android, because they are responsible for the Android 1.5 and 1.6 devices. For the most
that's
part.
That's what you get with Open, isn't it?
Well, it is.
I mean, the handset manufacturers and Google's got no control over the handset manufacturers or the carriers once the software leaves their door. And that's kind of the game that they've played. That's the consequence of having an open, or a open in air quotes, system.
Yeah, and it is going to generate more users. But, you know, you're talking to a group of Apple fanboys where, you know, our default position is not market share.
Yeah.
You know, our default position is everything else that will come out shortly.
The default position is, does it have an Apple logo on it?
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's the quality. Does it glow? Does my sleep light pulse
gently?
Oh, yeah.
Does it seem quite organic?
No, yeah, I don't like that sleep light. That doesn't seem right. But, you know, that's I think you know, the big thing for the developers is not just the fact that the market is biggest, although I'd say for a lot of the developers it is that the market on the iPhone is the biggest. And even though there are all these Android devices,
Are
the developers making money? Yeah, exactly. It still seems that the App Store on the iPhone is the place where the developers want to be. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. My primary reason is that I don't know anything about Android because I don't want to have two phones.
Yeah. Well, cards on the table. I think that iPhone's best phone. I think that Apple App Store, iPhone App Store, is the best App Store. I think Android is going to destroy Apple, though. I think that's inevitable.
I think Google and Apple are racing two different races. You look at Google, and it's clearly all about shipping volumes of handsets, whereas Apple is all about shipping volumes of handsets to users which appreciate that, and, you know, making money doing that. Google's got virtually zero financial or zero direct financial interest in shipping Android handsets. They're relying on search advertising and app advertising, which is probably one of the reasons why they haven't really pushed their paid app stuff worldwide, is that really it's not a priority for them. They've never had a strong checkout sort of system. Google checkout's always been, you know, restricted in what countries it can operate in and things like that. They've never really built that up to what iTunes has with their payment processing stuff.
And all of that is from the perspective of the developer, because from the perspective of the user, if you don't care about advertising, I think a lot of people don't, then you know the fact that most of the stuff on the Android is free, if that is indeed what the case is, then that's, you know, then I'd imagine that some users would kind of talk about that as an advantage, but you know, who knows what they're missing out on. And you know, I mean, I know that for most apps, that if there's one with advertising and there's one without, maybe I'll get the one with advertising to see if I like it and I'm going to keep it. But I'll immediately, you know, shell out $1 or, you know, $2 to not have to put up with ads.
I just want to mention also the numbers that you said before. What was it? Yep. Sort of double the sales on Android phones.
About 33 million versus about 16 million.
Those numbers almost never count the iPod Touch or the iPad.
Yeah.
Which, so from a developer's perspective, you know, they're just as valid devices to work for. So, you know,
iPad is a very different device.
Phone market share.
Point taken on the Touch, but I think the iPad is a different device and should be up against netbooks.
It's irrelevant to developers.
Yeah, it's not the case. I mean, Chopper 2's on the iPad, the iPhone, the iPod Touch, yeah. Right? So it's, yeah, they're all the same device. I mean, this is the thing, is that actually, I mean, obviously you've got to do a little bit more work, maybe a lot more work, to move to the iPad from the iPhone, but maybe not. It's a pretty easy step for a market to take.
Yeah, right.
Versus going Android to desktop.
Was a month.
Sorry, what was that?
Chopper 2 took a month to port to the iPad, you know, a month's work for...
It took that long.
And most of that's obviously in artwork rather than any sort of core engine stuff.
Most of it was in surfing, though. I mean, I follow you on Twitter.
It was a much part-time, probably.
Having a sandwich.
But it was, it's just laying out user interface and stuff like that. A few things that you have to kind of get right. But yeah.
I ported Privateer to the iPad in case any of you are wondering.
Go and buy it now. Is it a pay for it, or is it free?
What about Hello Kitty? Whatever happened to that?
Oh, Hello Kitty.
Oh, I'm afraid I can't talk about that.
No, it needs to be a secret.
Is that on iPad?
Yeah, it's definitely on the iPad. Actually, it's better on the iPad because it's there's a button in the corner. I should be patenting this, but it's a 2x button, so you can make it even bigger and even scarier.
Amazing.
I know.
That button that you're proposing patenting, that's from Apple. Then they provided the functionality in every iPad. Is that right? It's a technicality.
I suppose so.
Yeah.
I mean, possibly. I am this beer, this cider that I'm drinking was paid for by all of the profits from Hello Kitty.
I bought that.
Oh, sweet! I can go buy another beer.
On the bright side, it's South African.
You serious?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure South African cider. Who would have thunk it? And it tastes to me, it tastes a bit strange, a little bit like cherry. Maybe I had a stroke again that day. My taste goes all whack. So no one's going to build apps for Android, even though there's a fucking ton of them. Actually, another reason there's a ton of them out there, but this is not why the sales are up. I saw that what's the new Google one? What do they call their thing?
Nexus.
The Nexus 2? S. I saw one of the Super Bowl ads, I think, was for the Nexus S. For $200, you get two of them. for $200, they give you one and then give you another one free.
This is some good numbers. So we can divide those numbers by two.
Or multiple.
They've got a shipload sitting in a warehouse somewhere that they've got to move now.
Yeah, before we find out that's what their numbers are based on.
Yeah.
Cheeky little. It's actually, you know, from a developer's point of view as well, it's, you know, the Android is harder to develop for. The iPhone, you know, in the iPhone world, it's actually become a little bit harder because we've got a few more devices now because they release a new one each year.
Yeah.
And there's some different capabilities. But in the Android world, you know, there's some really significant things which are different, like the screen size and so on and so forth. And that just reminds me of J2ME. And that's actually why when you can start developing for the iPhone, that I shied away from it initially because I'd had such a bad experience with J2ME, and that's why I gave up developing that mid-PSSH SSH client for J2ME, because I got 30 emails a day from people with 30 different devices that all worked differently. Mm. It was ridiculous.
Is it a naive question to ask, how much work is it actually to support different screen sizes? Can you not do some kind of fluid layout sort of thing?
Well, you can if you've got an app that does fluid layouts. Yeah. But that kind of presupposes more of a desktop style of UI, which isn't as exciting.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the really successful iPhone apps are kind of pixel perfect layouts,
which is
just hard to do. And we've all experienced that with going from the regular iPhone to the iPhone 4, because that requires twice as many, four times as many pixels, but doubles the resolution. And that's meant that you've needed to recreate those graphics. But fortunately, it's a 1-to-2. Mm. So it's quite an easy step. And having to do all kinds of different screen sizes, that's hard. It's too hard. Not worth it.
Put in the too hard basket.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, screw those Android guys. I technically am an Android user, but I've because I stole one from the prize draw a month or two ago. I've never seen it.
So that wasn't by choice, just by convenience.
Yes, by convenience, but it's proved to be inconvenient.
So what was those numbers? Was it 33 million?
33 million.
So actually it's 32 million.
No, okay.
And keep going.
But I one day I hope to see that Android phone that I stole, but I'm not actually holding my breath.
Well, you won't be able to upgrade it anyway, so it won't matter.
There's a new iPhone coming soon, right?
Bound to be.
I mean, there's a new one every year, right?
Yeah.
There's always going to be a new one every year.
Yeah.
So let's not talk about Steve Jobs. It's a bummer and it's grim.
Yeah.
All right. I want to talk about favorite apps. I have no idea if you will just push your own apps. And I don't have favorite apps of my own. Actually, I'll tell you, Camera Plus is my very favorite app, followed very closely by Chopper 2, followed by Real Estate CoNZ and Hello Kitty. And I don't know, I'm just parroting back your own apps.
How would you rank those in terms of the amount of time you've spent using them?
I've spent far more time using Camera Plus as an end user.
Really?
I.e. looking at people's photos that they've uploaded using it. A little bit of time griping about people who've applied inappropriate filters to a given scene, and then sometime going, oh wow, actually that looks really hot.
Mm. I've got a favorite app actually. I think it's according to my app fall wall, it's quite popular. It's 8mm.
8mm.
Yeah, it's an app which does video recording, and you'll like this.
It makes it look like it was done in the 70s.
Real time effects. Yeah, so I can shoot video like it's in the 70s.
Are you in the 70s though? Shouldn't you make it look like it's shot in 2011?
I have a jacket that's from the 70s.
Right. All right. Say no more.
Exactly.
Do you smoke quite heavily? Do you drive a Quattro?
I would like to drive a Quattro. Yeah, but this is quite cool because there's a problem with these video cameras is that you shoot some video with your iPhone. It's an HD video camera, so it looks amazing, which means that you're shooting video, you've suddenly got to dress your sets, suddenly in your video you can see all of the imperfections around, and it makes I think it makes people a bit more self-conscious. Whereas if you put a filter on the video which makes it look fucked, I think it actually makes people a whole lot more comfortable with taking video. So I really like it.
It's an interesting point.
Dave, your favorite app?
Tricky one. I think I might go with the real estate app. Pimp Cars app again.
Hey,
we're looking at houses, so
How many houses are you looking at? Do you just go down the list and tick all the boxes and just say, get me all of these ones?
Yeah. Okay, this and this and this.
Can you move the beach closer really to cool. this one? I'm sorry, I don't mean to make fun, but goddamn, you're doing well. Leighton, favorite apps?
I don't know. Mine's kind of boring, I guess.
Your own.
It's probably my favorite.
Twitterific.
Of my own apps, probably Convert is my favorite out of the ones that we've made so far.
What is Convert?
It's basically just a little unit converter. So I use it for currency conversions quite often. See what the US dollar is doing, see how shit it is at the moment, and
don't
see how much money I've lost overnight. that sort of thing. But it's I like it because it's, I think it's one of the nicer designed unit converters out there, and it's suits me.
And it's definitely not an incredibly obvious app to make. I liked the I mean, I remember making those in JavaScript, right? JavaScript little web pages.
Here's the thing with a lot of the apps that we've created. It's a lot of them have sort of been around, you know, there's all these existing apps which do exactly the same thing, but they're all absolutely shit on the iPhone.
Yeah.
And I couldn't stand using them, so ended up creating something which I liked and
right.
other people, I think, could find useful. So that's how a lot of our apps actually come about, is I can't stand using some of the shit that's on the App Store, so I created myself.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting idea because you can come at it and think, oh, this has already been done. This idea has already been done. You know, this isn't new. But actually, it's a really successful idea to try and do that. Is to take an established genre and to do a new take on it, or to do a better take on it. And yeah, that's exactly what you did with Convert.
I'd do the same thing. I'd build a Convert app that was also a torch and played fart noises.
It's been done.
I'm sure it's been done. Actually.
Yeah, but it was a tip calculator, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's actually interesting because Apple kind of take that approach as well, and that, you know, a lot of their products that they come out with aren't original, but they're implemented in a really original way.
Yep.
And that was kind of the big thing with the iPhone, was that it was a smartphone, but it was a totally different approach to creating a smartphone from what anyone had done before. And I think that's kind of important, I think.
That Morgan is just holding up a phone with a full QWERTY keyboard.
Yep.
And I'm doing my impressed face.
It's Windows Mobile Pocket PC. Yeah, you should see his face. He looks so incredibly happy with it.
I could type so fast on that.
Yeah, it's got a thumb keyboard.
Get me out of here.
It's got a touch screen naturally. And I think this was produced in about 2001, 2002.
So where's your stylus at?
Did you guys see the original Android handset prototype that they showed before the iPhone had been announced?
No.
It was basically, imagine a BlackBerry with, you know, the full QWERTY keyboard, the tiny screen at the top.
Yeah.
That was basically what Android was before Apple showed the iPhone. It was essentially a ripoff of a BlackBerry. A totally text interface, no touch screen, full keyboard. It was absolutely totally different to the Android that you see today. And I think obviously, after the iPhone was announced, they did some major work on Android and totally reworked it, which is probably why it's where it is today. Mm. In that, it's kind of,
that'll be before Google got involved. Yeah,
I think they were showing that just as at the time of the Google acquisition. I think they were showing that stuff.
Mm. Remember, Carl, that was about
a year before the iPhone was announced.
You had a hackathon.
I had an Open Moco.
Open Moco.
God.
Wait, that's also for sale. It's not going at the moment. It's still for sale. But there's no success fees until it sells. So yeah, I'm going to keep listing it. Yeah, that thing. I was excited about that. I got that before I got my iPhone.
Immediately before.
And
it must have been within a month or so.
It was about a month before, yeah. And I mean, I've flashed it a few times to try and get it going, but I mean, it's never actually been a phone.
Yeah.
But it was a fun looking thing.
What did it run? Was it some sort of Linux? Was it?
Yeah, it did run something based on Linux. It was it was Open Moco something. But you know, I went back onto the site to have a look to see if I could get it going in a sort of a moment of weakness. And they've released a new version, and they're not really supporting the old version because it was kind of crap. Like, I think it had a GPS chip in it, but there was no software that could use the GPS chip. I don't know. It was quite an expensive.
Why do they bother?
The iPhone didn't exist, and people wanted to be able to, you know, hack their own stuff and build a cool platform.
And it was, and I think that's, you know, the iPhone was, you know, is a phone. It wasn't like they'd invented a phone, but it was still a revolutionary product. It was a new way of looking things, and you know, each one of these products builds on everything that's come before, and every now and then you get something which is kind of quite exciting and quite different, and it brings the whole industry ahead. And I think that for iPhone users, actually, I'm really excited about the fact that Android is suddenly out and meaning more, and Windows Phone 7 is out and doing more, because you know, it just because everyone brings the whole environment up together. So
a rising tide lifts all ships.
I think it's, you know, that is exactly right. And it also, you know, we don't like, I think, you know, it's fair to say we don't like monopolies, and I don't think anyone's good in a monopoly situation. And we've had, you know, our time in the IT industry with monopolistic players.
Yeah.
And you know, we didn't like it. Even if it did result in some of the best operating systems in the world.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it was good for everyone. So yeah, I really welcome
Android definitely now. Isn't hurting Apple. Because I mean, so Android might be up to 33 million shipments versus Apple's 16 million, but Apple are up 85% year-on-year growth.
Yeah, and they've also always had highest profits.
They are
growing,
and they have huge piles of cash, and they're doing extremely well.
And
developers are doing better out of them.
They've always had huge piles of cash. Like even in the 90s, when being an Apple fanboy was really, you know, you were really stretching yourself.
It was people wearing sandals, right?
Yeah, but with billions of dollars in the bank.
Yeah.
I mean, they've always had money, and they also, in all of their sales today, they've got the highest profit margins, right? Like, which is
they're sitting about 40% gross margin, which is ridiculous for the industry.
Yeah, and it's kind of like it's not something that you can sit there as a fan of the product and say, hey, this is fantastic. They're making the most profit out of this device. You know, isn't that great? But you know, in terms of long term sustainability of these platforms, I think we're seeing at least Android and iPhone as the two, you know, two new smartphone platforms as having great sustainability. You know, they're not going away, and you know, hopefully Windows Phone 7 gets into the same league, because at the moment, well, it doesn't look like it is.
And who knows how that'll be.
That's going to be an interesting thing. I have some interest in Windows Phone 7 and WebOS from ARM/HP. But I don't know. Android just doesn't interest me at all. I think where Microsoft and ARM, now HP, are coming from is a much better approach to building a platform than say, Android.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I guess Android is there and pushing Apple to keep on top of their game if they need that. But I really hope Windows Phone 7 and WebOS sort of gain some traction. And I think the interesting thing is going to be to see what Nokia do with their platform. I mean, because at the moment they're kind of relegated to selling smartphones to the third world based on Symbian and stuff like that. Well, that's kind of serious. Their margins are razor thin.
Yeah.
And that's where all their shipments go to, is basically the third world countries and supplying handsets to them, which is why they're not doing so flash at the moment. They've got no high margin products. They're just shipping a shit ton of them.
And there are murmurings and rumors that they're going to be moving maybe to a different platform, or maybe,
you know, right,
making some change to their platform. Is that going to be from Symbian to Phone 7? Is that going to be from Symbian to Android? Who knows? We don't know yet. If it was Phone 7, that'd be a huge coup for Microsoft. This is something we spoke about last week.
It would be excellent for Microsoft and Nokia.
Well, they've got a Microsoft guy just started up in charge, didn't they, of Nokia? But it would seem like Android would be the
better fit.
Be the smarter move. I think, you know, the big difference between, you know, what Windows Phone 7 is doing and what iPhone are doing compared to what Android are doing is the control of the carriers, I think. And it sounds like Windows Phone 7 is, you know, following in kind of Apple's lead of saying, actually, you know, we're going to own the experience. As carriers, you're going to provide carrying and leave it at that. And I think I actually wouldn't be surprised if Android, you know, in the next version, when version 3 comes to phones or something like that, that they say, hey, we're going to now standardize the Android platform. You know, we've recognized that there's a big problem with which version you're using, and it makes it difficult for developers, makes it difficult for users, makes it uncertain. We're going to standardize the Android platform, and you know, carriers will be able to put apps onto phones, but they're going to go through the regular marketplace, you know, to do it and do those kinds of things. Because I think that you know, there's a whole lot of different aspects to every platform, but you know, of all of the things, I think that has been kind of one of the major wins of this platform. And you know, as developers, you know what people have got, and you know, even, I mean, for iPhone, we've got several different versions of the OS out there, but you know that people can upgrade. So, you know, if you want to release something for a new OS version, you can, or at least you know that 90% of the market are going to be on, you know, 4.2.1, which is the latest.
Right.
The problem people have with doing that, though, is that they've got absolutely no control over what the handset manufacturers and carriers do, because it is totally open. They can fork Android and go their own way if they want to.
But there is strength in numbers.
There's no mechanism for Google to even sort of attempt to enforce that sort of standardization and really pushing handset manufacturers to keep up on the OS updates. Because, I mean, there's absolutely no financial interest.
You know what? I think there is. You might be right. It's not like they're suffering. But if Google puts some branding around it and sort of says, hey, you know, this is Android 3. This is, you know, this is the licensing. We don't want you guys messing around. I mean, the carriers must know somewhere that they're not doing an enormous favor to their users. But you know, sales don't lie, right? I mean, well, maybe they lie, maybe they're all in the warehouse, but maybe there is no incentive for them to do it. But I hope that they do, because I think that'd be sensible.
This is a comedy show. Tech show? Comedy show?
So an Android walked into a bar.
And the bartender said, why the long face?
I said, oh, it's my full keyboard.
All right, we're going to move
on. More than it deserved. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. No, well done. We're going to move on from this stuff to the rest of the show. I hope you guys don't mind. Do you have anything else you want to say? The rest of the show is the news. It's the word of the week. It's all that other good stuff. Sounds like someone's never listened to Discourse.
Never.
Shame on you.
Oh, this bit's really good. Go, Morgan.
How about we read some news?
That's not what I was thinking.
Oh, you were thinking I was going to do one of these. I'll do one of these. I'm taking a risk.
Urban Dictionary, word of the week.
Oh, it's the right sting, Carl. I can't believe it. I'm so happy. My mum would be proud. Carl, your word is box lock.
Box lock.
Box lock.
Box lock. I mean, it's that's obvious.
Yeah.
That's obvious, obviously. I mean, is I'm presuming that this is related to piercings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this is where you have a piercing problem, where a piercing becomes locked.
Yep.
And it requires a trip to the emergency room.
God, I knew this word was too obvious. Leighton.
Ooh. I'm going to go totally not dirty this week. And it is a lock attached to a box.
Oh, you've listened to the show before, Leighton, you sneaky little bugger. David, your guess?
I'm going to go with a chastity belt.
Okay, this is excellent. So that's kind of a combination of the first two. Sting Machine, do you want to have a guess? You're not actually on a microphone. If you pull that one up. No, you're not going to do it? No, okay, fine. Sting Machine's not playing. Congratulations, gentlemen. All three of you are wrong. It is the female equivalent of a cock block. Usage is, I was hitting on that guy, but my girlfriend stepped in and totally box locked me. Box lock.
Yes, I'm definitely going to use that.
It's a good one, eh?
Yeah.
you can box lock your lady. First news story. Do you want to do one, Carl, or should I grab one?
You go right ahead.
I will grab one. How about this? British border agent fired for putting wife on terrorist watch list. This is from Wired Threat Level. This little motherfucker, he's in the UK. I already said that in the headline. And he has lost his job, about the least you could expect, after authorities there discovered he had placed his wife on a terrorist watch list in an attempt to rid himself of her. She was stranded in Pakistan for 3 years because she flew away on holiday. He puts her on the watch list. Now she can't fly back. 3 years.
How does that take 3 years to sort out? That seems bizarre.
Well, no one discovered it, and no one believed her when she was trying to sort it out. And then it was, I mean, there was just some kind of, here we go. We can tell you exactly what it is. It was the Agents Act was only detected after he applied for a promotion and a background check revealed that his wife was on the watch list, right? So they only figured it out indirectly.
But surely.
So what was she doing? Was she sitting in this airport all this time?
I think she was probably with her family in Pakistan.
I've seen that movie. So she was from Pakistan. So she maybe gave up and didn't try and come back.
That might be right.
Yeah, because I mean, that's pretty scary.
Why would you want to come back to that?
It's pretty scary to think that you could just end up nowhere, right? Like on hold. And you'd think that you'd jump on Twitter, have a bit of a tweet, and suddenly you get a reply back from UK Gov saying, "Hey, don't worry, I'll sort it out for you. Yeah. We'll put up some more towers, and you'd be fine."
Put up some more towers. We'll forget the whole thing happened.
Yeah, we'll fix it, and that'll be HAT. Yeah, and then the name of a politician.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is,
you could always make a website.
Yeah, you could make a little website, and maybe that would be a solution. But the thing is that there are millions of names on these watch lists, including children. And I mean, the watch lists are extremely unsophisticated. And these children, by virtue of having a similar name to a suspected terrorist, get the full works when they go through the airport. They get the frisk. I mean, it's not appropriate for a toddler to be getting a pat down, I think, because they have the same name as someone else. I mean, there's security, and then there's security theatre. Yeah, do the things that actually work. I'd say the watch list is tenuous at best, and as we see here in this story, subject to abuse.
Yeah, but it seems like it's been subject to abuse once. I mean, I guess we don't know, especially if they only found out because, 3 years later he decided to go for a background. Well, he had a background check. I mean, then that's pretty scary. But I mean, are people
abusing
it a whole
lot? So that tells you it doesn't have great oversight, doesn't it?
It certainly doesn't have great oversight. Yeah.
All right. Well, we're not sparking much discussion on this one. Let's move to the next story. How about good news, eh? How about some good news? Oh, that must be pizza has arrived. Our listeners love it when I interrupt the show to have pizza. I mean, the pizza arriving was actually pertinent to Lance being there. It was to do with Groupie, for fuck's sake. So, I mean, it wasn't just random dinner arrival. Anyway.
It was deal of the day.
Yes, it was deal of the day, exactly. That was a $1 pizza that we received and ate. And I'm not responsible for the story of the conversation not getting back on track because, to be honest, I barely listen and at the best of times. So I had no idea what he was talking about. I was reading my stories and drinking Monster Energy drink, the sports person's choice. That's probably not their favourite.
I should probably say something from the can
to make this seem like a really authentic advertising spot. Taurean, ginseng, B vitamins and guarana. It's the green clawed monster that will make you very happy. That's probably not a paid announcement.
That I got $5 here for that. That was great. Your hand is shaking like crazy.
The stuff really works.
It really works. Do you have another one of those in the fridge?
I've got two more in the fridge.
That sounds really good.
That would be a good idea, wouldn't it?
That would be a really good
definitely
idea.
I should definitely have a liter and a half of Monster Energy drink. I've heard that. Oh my God, have we got two? Our dinner tonight, not for our remote guests, our dinner tonight is brought to us by Sal's Pizza, www.sal's.co.nz. Apparently we've got two between three people. It's far too much pizza.
That's a lot of pizza.
Especially considering they're probably both vegetarians. Sucked in, Carl. No sausage for you.
No.
All right, what was the story? This monster's really doing its job on my brain.
What's the next thing?
The next story is no, hackers can't open the Hoover Dam floodgates.
That sucks though, doesn't it?
That they can't. Yeah, because that'd be great.
Because that's the dream.
It is the dream.
Best film of all time, War Games.
Yep. So Homeland Security, aides from Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee said that they needed to have legislation giving them an internet kill switch, which is similar to what they've just used in Egypt, although probably easier to kick into action, because what if the terrorists opened the floodgates on the Hoover Dam and killed thousands of people? Well, people from the Hoover Dam say there's simply no way that can happen. It's not connected to the internet. You goddamn morons. Why would it be?
Is that
and the story is the same with other, similar
Didn't they actually, it wasn't so much an internet kill switch as a let's disconnect the Hoover Dam from the internet.
No,
switch.
It was let's have the capability to turn off the internet when we need to.
Did you read beyond the headline?
Yes.
Really?
Yep.
How far?
I have not read this story, but I've read other stories related to this. This is a good story
because I think, before you're pretending not to be so interested in War Games, best film of all time.
Have you seen War Games 2?
There's
War Games 2 with another AI, and the AI from War Games has to compete with that AI from the new one.
Does that actually might diminish the quality of War Games, the original?
Joshua.
Yeah, it was so good. But that's the dream. That's the dream of hackers, and that's the dream of the internet. I remember my first internet moment was when I was able to, with a text-only browser, able to check the temperature in a hot tub in some guy's house somewhere in the US, and the temperature of a Diet Coke can in his fridge. And so the idea of opening the floodgates on the Hoover Dam, like, that's, I'm disappointed if that's not out there.
It's not out there, and you don't actually want people to be able to do that because people live downstream from the Hoover Dam. Yeah. And if you opened it up and let all that
just
lovely heavy
just
water
just a little bit, though.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Give them a taste of what we've got down here.
Maybe we could, maybe, oh dear,
oh,
a little bit of flooding.
Too soon.
We don't even need to have floods for our people to be drowning in the rivers. Have you seen all the toddlers and so on that have been drowning?
Yeah,
what the fuck? How does a child drown at Waiwera? How is like a 2.5-year-old alone in a pool?
Thank you.
How is a 2.5-year-old alone in a public pool? I don't understand how that can happen.
They have lifeguards, shouldn't they, at Waiwera, in
That's
a public
right.
pool?
That's right. But they also have, like at the bottom of the hydro slides, they've got little pools which don't have someone sitting
in
the next to
them.
No,
they do. They do, I think.
They do now?
Well,
there's someone at the top who would probably
watch.
No,
there was someone at the bottom because in 2007 I came back from the UK and I had a... just this insatiable desire to go on a hydro slide. So I went to Paraki, aquatic park.
Yeah,
it's as bad as you remember.
Yeah,
the mats were too short for me, so I had to use two mats to get my elbows and my knees on a mat. So I came away quite hurt. But then I went to Waiwera, and because I'd heard, you hear stories of like the people who knocked themselves out as they went down and drowned in the pool at the bottom. And when I was there, 4 years ago, there was a lifeguard at the bottom keeping an eye on people coming out. So I'm surprised that they removed that. But I mean, if it's a toddler, they wouldn't have been going down a hydro slide.
No. Well, you'd think not.
No.
But how does it happen? I don't understand how parents or siblings or whatever leave a toddler alone. I just don't see how it happens.
Yeah.
Now, this other one, this 4-year-old who drowned in a river, which is also a completely terrible story. For one thing, it's a river. It's probably near the house. And for another, the kid was playing with a ball and it accidentally went in the river and the kid followed it. So, it's sort of more understandable than a public pool.
Hmm.
Terrible. It's horrible. I can't stand it. I hate that so many people drown. It seems so easy to not drown. It just seems so easy to not drown.
Yeah.
Learn to swim. Learn to float. Be confident. Or watch your. I nearly drowned as a kid as well. My
just
father saved
so did
me. I think it's a common experience.
Yeah. I actually experienced. You know that recently there was that thing about, hey, when people are drowning,
they don't shout.
They don't shout. They don't wave for help. And I think that was a real eye opener.
Yeah.
But I experienced exactly that in the Whanganui River.
Right.
When I was a kid, and I remember floating away, and I remember exactly that feeling, and I wasn't able to call out to anyone, and then to kill the suspense, some dude reached in, pulled me out, and I was fine.
You're not a clone.
Yeah. Not anymore.
This mouthful brought to you by Rudely Speaking with a Mouthful of Pizza. God damn, it's good. Sales.co.nz.
I can't believe this isn't meat. What is this?
Delicious. Glorious. Wonderful.
It's fucking tofu.
So now this is actually an important message for all parents and actually everyone out there. What you've seen in Hollywood movies and TV shows for your whole life where the drowning person shouts and screams for help and waves their arms is not actually what happens when people are presently drowning. It's what happens perhaps when people realize they're about to. What you need to watch out for is the kid looking like they're trying to climb out of the water like that and bobbing up and down under the water, looking like they're trying to climb a ladder. And not able to talk, probably pale of face. As soon as you see your kid do that, fucking grab them.
Yeah.
Worst case scenario, you give your kid a hug unnecessarily. Right?
Well, some stranger's kid a hug unnecessarily, and then you get on the news.
Yeah. We'll put that story in the show notes, the one that you referred to. There was an example of that was given. Someone who had done this course and learned how to actually spot what a drowning person really looks like. There were some parents with their child in the water. He sees that the kid's drowning, starts bolting for the kid, and the parents are like, hey, take it easy, there's nothing going on. Grabs the kid, who actually was drowning, within meters of its parents.
Yeah.
Right? If you don't know what to look for, I think it might be easy not to spot it.
Yeah, that was the kind of the scariest thing. It's been the father of two.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, wow, you might not actually spot it. It felt like one of those things that you had to read. Like that time I learned how to get a raisin out of a kid's nose.
Do you suck?
Oh, no.
No?
No. Do you get a vacuum cleaner? No.
No? What do you do?
No, you
blow up the other nostril.
You close the other nostril and then you blow in the mouth.
Ah.
So easy. Like, because you'd think, oh, that's just going to go in the lungs and out the... No, it comes out the nose.
That's the only place it can come out.
Yeah, that's right.
Naturally.
Yeah. And it doesn't take much. Like, their lungs, pretty small.
Yep.
Yeah.
Check it out. This is a child safety podcast.
This is fantastic. We're going across so many genres.
Yep. We'll just cut all that good stuff from the beginning
and
talk about child safety.
Fantastic.
Now,
have you ever
stubbed
your toe? Oh.
Oh, my God.
Oh.
Not in a long time. And that's a childhood thing, stubbing a toe.
That's why we're
like peeling the skin back. Like, so you see that fresh red meat below your toenail? That is grim. And I did that so many times.
And it takes a long time to recover from that, actually.
Kids of today, they probably won't experience it because they wear shoes.
Yeah.
Lazy. What's wrong with them? Yeah. They're not going to get soles like leather. So when you're at the pools and when you're at the beach, watch out for your kids and watch out for other people's kids. You know, don't worry about looking like you're grabbing a kid. If you think it's drowning, just do something. Alert the parents. Something. Is your kid all right? Make sure.
Maybe put a notice out on the PA.
Take care of everyone. Please. It's so easy just to watch. Next story. This is actually another really great one. Great one. Spray on skin. Has anyone heard about this?
For all those stubbed toes out there, there's hope waiting.
Yeah, I don't know that they will necessarily... maybe they will. Maybe it will become so easy that they will.
Of course.
So everyone has heard of skin grafts, and everyone has probably seen people who've had terrible burns and had skin grafts, and they look all scary and painful and awkward. Now, I'll put this in the show notes, and I'll probably put the video on the site. But just be aware that there are some pictures which are upsetting because they do show people who have been burned. But there is a bright side, and that is this amazing new, well, they call it a skin gun, that they extract adult stem cells, like specialized stem cells, from the burn victim's own body, and within 90 minutes can culture it up and turn it into basically like a sprayable paste that they then use this special device to spray your own stem cells onto your wound. And they've only used it, they say, maybe a dozen times already. I mean, it's a device that actually exists, but it's still in trials. And it works astonishingly fast to repair burns. They've got one example in the video of a guy who was a police officer who was splashed with flaming petrol, had second and third degree burns on his shoulders, arms and face. You can't see any scars. And he says that he was healed within 3 days.
Yeah, it was like an hour and a half after the application that it was looking.
It's almost
like unreal. Eh? Yeah, it's well, it was it's, on the National Geographic.
The stem cell research is I don't know, really interesting stuff. And then you've got all these religious psychos in the States really, really getting into it, and it's almost up there with the GE genetic modification sort of stuff that people are, well, certain groups are really anti the stem cell research, but you see some of the stuff coming out of it, and it's absolutely insane. Regrowing organs and
this is an interesting cells. One though, because this isn't stem cells from embryos and fetuses and, you know, the kind of the unpleasant side of all of that, which seems to be the morally gray area. This is stem cells from the dude. It's like, hey, you've got a bad burn, can we take some stem cells? And we then develop them and then spray them back on. Like, that's
From adults.
Yeah, that was new to me.
Yeah. Now the difference here is that with the embryonic stem cells, they're not specialized, so they can become any cell. Right. So if you can use embryonic stem cells to grow, you know, any part of a body. With these stem cells, they're taking skin stem cells, so all they can do is grow skin. They can't grow muscle or nerve tissue or bones, but they can grow skin really well.
Right, which is
perfect
for burns.
And it only takes about an hour to extract these and culture enough that then they can spray them on the injury. It's absolutely incredible, and it means that people don't have to go through months of incredibly painful skin grafts and, you know, all the dressing treatments and so on. They just basically get a biopsy taken from their body, which you probably won't notice when you're suffering from terrible burns. Someone goes away to a lab and comes back in an hour and a half with a weird-looking spray gun and sprays your injury, yeah. and they send you home.
You know, the biggest problem I had with the whole story was that the video showing it looked too professional.
Yeah.
And that's a really interesting thing, and it seems like it's real. I really hope it's real, and it seems amazing. But the video was shot like an Apple commercial, you know, in front of a white screen. It was really professional. Everyone was really dressed up. The angles were exciting. They weren't reality TV.
To be fair, it's from National Geographic, who do have a history of producing high quality material. But yeah. it
seems a little creepy. Seems like a, by the sound of it, sounds like a drug ad or something like that. Something really heavily commercialized.
It definitely seems too good to be true, and it does kind of hit that part of my brain where I just think this, it works too fast, it works too well. There's some fakery going on here, so I'm just taking it at face value and assuming that it's true. And the guy who says that he was healed in 3 days actually was, but you know, hopefully in 3 months it doesn't turn out that these are the same guys that did the cold fusion bullshit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you know who you are.
You know who you are.
Yeah, assholes.
Mother, I stayed clean. Have I sworn already in the show? I think
no,
I have.
No, man, you know you haven't. No?
Still clean?
You're
making... Oh, wow. My mother will be so proud of me, finally. And my mother doesn't actually listen to the show. Who would? Hey, have you got any stories, Carl?
Hey, I do actually have something pretty interesting to talk about. I think I'm...
Is it something about living in the future?
It's a... If I were living in the future, obviously there's a lot more water around in the future, and there's that's no question. I think we take that for granted.
Ice caps melted, sea levels rising.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, where are we? We must be, I don't know, 30 meters, 50 meters above, 20 meters above sea level here. We'd be underwater for sure. And you've got to get around, right? And you don't want to get around on a jet ski because they're a bit passe now.
Yeah,
everyone's got them. What you want instead is a water-powered jetpack.
Oh my God, a water-powered jetpack? How could such a thing exist?
That's right, a water-powered jetpack.
And this must be something that they're working on now, and that's going to be ready in 20 years for tests, right?
You know, what would you say if I said that you could have one today for only $100,000?
I'd say I'll take one if it comes with steak knives.
That wouldn't be safe for it to come with steak knives.
I guess not, actually. But flying through the air with steak knives.
You should check out this one. It's a Wired story with a video. And I think this has actually been around before, because we've seen it before, but what seems to be new is that, and it actually does say that you can get one for $100,000. And it's a guy...
And you guys, you're successful iPhone developers. I mean, that's pocket change, right?
Guys, Dave, what do you think? 50-50?
Do you want a jetpack, Dave?
Yeah, I'd be pretty keen. I think as long as I had a parachute as well, because I don't know about it. I don't know if I trust it.
Well, you
know
don't what? Need a parachute.
You don't need a parachute. You're only 30 feet above the water. No, 30 feet above the water. In fact, it says
and it only
you don't
operates,
need to worry about it.
It only operates over water.
Yeah. So you, basically, you've got this jetpack. You've got this big hose. Like, I mean, it doesn't look that big to me, but it's probably to Morgan, this looks enormous. It's this hose going into the water. It sucks up all this water and fires it back down. Hey, stop laughing all over my story. Fires it back down like a jetpack. So the story has got this guy flying around. He's got this kind of a jet. I mean, there is a jet ski there, which seems to be, I guess that's his pump and so on and so forth. But he's flying around and he's maneuvering around some boats. I bet he's really popular. So spraying them with all this water. But... It looks awesome, and if you can go, you can go for 2 hours. I don't know. Does it say how fast you can go?
As if jet skiers weren't already unpopular enough.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, 35 miles per hour for up to 2 hours.
Wow, but it's awesome. Not really a form of transport, right? Though, is it?
Well, if you're transporting across this, like how wide is the Cook Strait?
You could definitely do it in 2 hours, but
yeah.
The chop would be a problem. I think.
No, the chop's not a problem. You're at 28 feet.
I think. Yeah, but you've got
blue suction,
jet ski
though.
At the bottom. I think anywhere a jet ski can go, it can go.
Yeah.
And jet skis seem to be able to go just about anywhere.
They can go anywhere.
You'd have good fun going and blading around Rangitoto and then buzzing Takapuna Beach and having parents wave their arms and shout at you.
Yeah, it actually says here, you know, falling 30 feet onto water might not be pleasant, but neither is going to kill you, sick.
I've fallen 30 feet onto water for fun. I've jumped off cliffs into rivers.
Did it kill
everyone? It was great. I laughed and chuckled and then climbed up the cliff again.
What I like is that it says on the end, and 2 hours of flight time is way more than you'll get from a traditional jetpack.
Yeah, well, I guess that's... Oh, no, but we've got a New Zealand one. What's that, what are they called? McPherson or something?
Martin.
Yeah, well, that probably can't do 2 hours, but that can do a long time, and it can fly over ground. But there, you know, you probably could plummet to your death. And I think
that's the problem.
I think the price is actually pretty similar, though, $100,000. I think it's not much more than that for the Martin. But the Martin's even louder. This thing seems like just brilliant fun, and I hope that it's possible to rent them like it's been possible to rent jet skis, because, God, it would be a fun way to spend an hour or so, wouldn't it?
Well, that would be pretty good. I think, yeah, it's like the Segway. No one would buy one, but you'd give it
but
a go.
But you'd kick someone off one.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't wait to see Jet Lev fly a Polo. That's going to be awesome.
Do you think Wozniak's going to get into this one?
Of course.
What a jetpack Polo. I love it.
Shave your beard.
Next story.
If I had a third nozzle for him.
You're kind of, you're going to be off the Christmas card list. You're quite into rockets, aren't you?
I am, yeah. How's that? Have you got a story coming up?
I don't know what the story is that's about rockets.
Well, yeah. I like rockets.
I like rockets too.
Is that a... No.
They're rockets. What are you doing with this, Carl?
It was a reverse segue.
Okay.
That's how you get out of something.
Okay.
Also known as a hospital pass.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of hospital passes, has anyone ever gotten a teen girl pregnant?
A what?
Teen girl? Were you ever a teen boy? No? Oh, you guys are nerds. I'm wasting my time with you guys. My material's useless. I need to talk to jocks instead. Well, it's such an obvious story. New initiative sees fall in teen pregnancy rates. Now, the problem with a high teen pregnancy rate is that it results in a high teen abortion rate. One follows the other like night follows day. This initiative is groundbreaking. They're offering the morning after pill to girls under 25. Hmm. Like that one, I mean, shouldn't this be kind of universal? I mean, what's the deal here?
So it wasn't available to girls under 25?
Well, it was. Actually, the initiative here is that it's free for anyone who's under 25. But, I mean, we live in New Zealand. Doesn't Pharmac subsidise these things? Surely it was about a dollar before anyway. Can't you just go to the pharmacy? You don't even need to go to a doctor anymore to get the morning after pill now, right? I think that's true.
I suppose not. But that's I guess previously people saw
it used to cost $40.
Okay.
Yeah.
So previously that was seen as, well, making it free was seen as a way to discourage responsibility.
Yeah. Well, the $40 thing meant that the girl who thought there's a chance I'm pregnant might be discouraged from having the pill if it's $40. Now it's free. There's no reason not to. Maybe she'll feel a little bit crook for a couple of days. But I think you feel probably much worse in your heart if you have to have an abortion just because you had, you know, you got pissed and rooted some dude in the nightclub toilets.
And as a bunch of dudes, this is a good topic.
Yeah, this is a great story
for us to cover. But it does all right, it seems like a good idea, and it doesn't, I can't imagine that that anyone would be thinking this is a good alternative to other forms of contraception.
Yeah. No, this is this is the kind of the catching net halfway down the cliff, and the ambulance is at the bottom, right? Yeah. What you really need is the gate at the top in the form of, you know, condoms or the pill. Teen girls. I know my hypothetical non-existent teen daughters, I will suggest that they have an injection of Depo Provera. Oh. Or maybe I won't even tell them what it is. Maybe I'll say, the vitamins, girls. Dig in. I mean, wouldn't you rather have your daughter, you know, on contraceptives than pregnant?
I'm hoping this isn't a question I need to think about for a wee while.
Oh, no, absolutely. Granted.
But in the future, it's all going to be different.
Well, that's true. Just to have it teleported out of there and put into safekeeping until she's ready to grow one. I mean, a teen girl is going to have the freshest possible eggs, right?
Yeah.
So that baby is going to be the best baby she could ever have, better than, you know, a 45 or 48-year-old. So then these girls can wait until they're 50 or 60 before they gestate and produce these babies, and that will be better for everyone except the kids.
That doesn't sound unrealistic.
It doesn't really. The teleportation part may be difficult.
Yeah.
Probably it's easier just to kind of, you know, stick something in there and grab it.
It must be teleportation must come pretty soon after jetpacks and spray-on skin, mustn't it?
Well,
can't be too.
Well, real jetpacks, yes. This jetpack, we can call it a jetpack because there is a jet involved, but it's a water jet.
Yeah.
I think this thing is cool. Listeners, I think you should watch the video because it really does look like great fun.
It looks cool, but
it's not what you think of as a jetpack.
I was pretty disappointed to learn that there was the jet ski behind it because I thought if it was a jetpack with a big tailpipe hanging out that had to suck up the water, I thought you could put up with that. It looks a little bit ridiculous, but that you've got to drag along a jet ski.
Hmm. Yeah.
I'll wait to the version 2.
There was a 13. I'm sorry. I'm going back to this other story that we've segued off already. There was a 13% reduction in abortions because of these free pills, which I think is pretty significant actually. Because I don't think abortion is I don't think it's a highlight of a woman's life to go through. Yeah. Let's hold this story for a couple of stories because it's awesome, and I don't want to do it right next to that one. Chat of the day! Congratulations, Microsoft. You lost $543 million online last quarter. Congratulations. You're doing so well. In fact, according to this chart, Microsoft haven't made money from their online division since it looks like 2006.
from the headline, I thought this was like an online poker scandal story or something like that. Like that banker that lost $1 billion in the futures market. But this graph doesn't look good. It's almost like the white is the bars.
Yeah. In the last four quarters, they've lost a total of $2.5 billion from their online division.
Four quarters.
What does that cover? That's Bing Maps.
Hotmail, Live, Live Chat, whatever they call MSN Messenger now, all of that stuff, which, I mean, I don't think there's any prospect of any of it making money for them. I guess Bing, they can hope that Bing it'll make money if they do advertising.
Do Bing do advertising? I don't know.
I can't say I use Bing.
I don't think they do.
That's their problem.
Right, well, they should get some goddamn ads on there. Maybe they can get them from Google. Google know how to do it.
But looking at this graph, it looks like the worst is behind.
Bing's got an AdWords ripoff.
Yeah.
You just loaded Bing. That's cheating.
I did.
All right. So I enjoyed this one. I'm actually a bit surprised that the Apple kids in the house didn't run with it a little bit more and make fun of Microsoft. I guess the thing is that Microsoft isn't really the enemy anymore, right?
Well, it's also the enemy, yeah. I mean, this online thing is a loss leader for them, and they've got, you know, it's not like they're going anywhere anywhere quickly. I mean, they could stop doing everything right now and still go on for 15, 20 years or something on the revenue that they've got already. So I don't know, man. It's a little Amazon, right? Amazon didn't make money for how long? Have they just started turning a profit in the last couple of years or something like that? So I don't know. I think, I mean, in a way, it's a little bit unfair to take these things out of the context of the larger business. But that's not to say that I think that they seem to be doing very well in anything at the moment.
Speaking of making money, have you ever seen The Cleveland Show? It's animated, so you probably wouldn't like it, Carl.
Ah.
Anyone else seen The Cleveland Show? This is the spin-off from Family Guy.
Never.
Mm-hmm.
In The Cleveland Show, there's a character called Tim the Bear, which is one of Cleveland's mates, and his wife is called Ariana Bear, played by a voice actress called Ariana Huffington, who knew, coincidentally, she runs some kind of blog or something that AOL just acquired for quite a lot of money. Have you heard about this story? I'm sure you have.
Absolutely.
AOL bought them for like $300 million.
That is a success story just waiting to happen.
$315 million.
Talk about a payday.
Well, they sold out. Well,
the best bit about this deal was that I think $300 million of it was in cash and $15 million in stocks.
Isn't that kind of the opposite of the way these things usually go?
Exactly. So it's a genius deal for her. Yeah. Man.
Hey, AOL, if you want to acquire the best podcast in New Zealand, I'll go for, you know, $200 million, $100 million. Actually, I'll go for heaps less. I'll go for $50 million, $10 million, $5 million. My final offer, $5 million. AOL, get in touch. Call me. I can't promise any kind of non-compete, though. Actually, no, I'll stick with you. I'll stick with you for at least two or three episodes.
Well, for non-compete, you just add on another million.
Oh, fair call.
That'd be fine.
Yeah, non-compete 3 months.
What was that? $6 million? Yeah.
$6 million.
Hold on. Okay, where's your phone?
It's with Vodafone anyway, so you probably have a problem calling. Have you seen this this website? Is Vodafone NZ fucked for everyone or just me.com?
I think I have. I remember seeing that a few days ago, actually.
All right, so now,
what's it all about, Morgan?
Spoiler warning, listeners, but this is actually Leighton's website. Tell me about it, Leighton.
Where do I start?
You start with the problem being Vodafone New Zealand fucking sucks.
That's problem number one. In the last few months, sort of from...
I got 99 problems and Vodafone New Zealand is one.
It's kind of...
Hip-hop fans in the house.
I don't know. Ever since sort of mid-December, their network is it's absolutely unusable. You get no service for 40 minutes at a time. 3G's useless. It'll show signal, but you won't... calls will go straight through to voicemail. It's just absolutely unusable. And I don't know, I've kind of been ramping up my complaints to Vodafone NZ on Twitter over the last 3 or 4 months and had absolutely zero response.
Do you know why you've had zero response? I'll give you a hint. It's because you're blocked. I was blocked as well. And Paul Brislin said, no, I'm sure you're not, and then checked, and yes, I'd been blocked. They do not like criticism. It's one of their many faults.
And that's kind of the thing that really fucked me off the most. It wasn't the fact that their network was shit, even though that is annoying. It was the fact that there was absolutely zero engagement from them even when things were reasonably polite from the outset.
What do you expect from a communications company? Communication? You're mad.
Did you hit your
head in that earthquake?
It frustrates the shit out of me. And
is it new? I mean, how long has it been going on for?
So it's been where I live has had sort of poor signal.
Christchurch.
For years.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah, which is what the flattest general, city in New Zealand.
But, yeah.
And that's the thing I don't understand.
Shouldn't that make it the easiest city, to?
Look, you put a cell phone tower on top of the cathedral, and you're away.
Yep. Except in the next earthquake, that thing is definitely coming down.
Yeah.
That's actually
get the wizard.
Actually funny. The day of the earthquake, I was actually really surprised how Vodafone's network held up. But ever since sort of mid-December, it's been getting worse and worse to the point that it's unusable. And they don't seem to want to know about it. They don't want to do anything about it. And
how is that even possible?
Believe,
how can it be getting worse?
I cannot even acknowledge that there is a problem.
Hmm. Because their usage hasn't increased significantly, has it? Because XTN 2 degrees... cannibalize some of their user base. So the fact that it's getting worse.
Yeah, Vodafone in the last quarter added something like 35,000 customers, which is like, it's nothing.
Mm.
It's not a significant churn during a quarter.
That's only a single digit percentage, yeah?
Yeah, I think they've got
2 million.
Like 2.5 million
right.
Subscribers. So it's not a huge proportion, but I don't know. It's interesting because you see the things that were happening in Australia with Vodafone over there, and they're using similar. I think they're using the same cell site technology as what they're using here, which is supplied, funnily enough, by Nokia Siemens, which seems interesting. A handset manufacturer providing core switching stuff for mobile networks, and it seems to be Although it's not specific to the iPhone, but it seems to be much more noticeable on iPhone. You do a search on Twitter for Vodafone, and you'll see all the complaints daily from particularly iPhone users, but also other users that have just got no signal in sort of the middle of major cities in New Zealand, and it's just useless.
Yeah. So the biggest part of the problem is that there's obviously a problem. And so they're obviously aware of it, and they're obviously trying to fix it, but they're not saying.
But are they? That's the thing.
They must be trying to fix it.
It's the most frustrating bit. There's absolutely no acknowledgement. Yeah. We don't know what they're doing, whether they even see it as a problem, whether they're trying to fix it or what. They've just said nothing. They've just totally ignored it. And I'm not the only one that they're ignoring on Twitter. Yeah. There's a whole bunch of people who are complaining almost daily now.
Mm.
That their signal is absolutely shit.
It's probably
calls are going straight through to voicemail when they've got signal. 3G isn't working. It's just, it's gone beyond sort of, you know, a minor inconvenience to be actually really inconvenient.
Yeah, and it must be a scary thing for, you know, it's probably something that they can't acknowledge as a, you know, to say this is happening, because, you know, it obviously it's not happening to everyone. But I hope they finish it soon. I've actually been quite lucky that I don't really have any problems, except, you know, maybe I've kind of forgotten that when I go out for lunch in Newmarket that it's impossible to use 3G.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, the 3G is actually worse than the free Wi-Fi at the local pub, which is really bad.
Mm. Don't do your banking. I have experienced this problem, and the way I get it is not with mobile data, it's with calls being dead silent. And then there's just the sound of breathing. Just. And I think that must be a technical problem.
It,
Hello, listeners. Are you in your car by yourself? Are you lying in bed at night alone at home in the dark? Did you just hear that noise and did it send chills down your spine, or did it make you feel warm in your in-betweens? I ask you, what's your answer? Do you feel a little fizzing? Do you feel a fizzing? I will tell you something else that will make you feel a fizzing at the justice of it all. Pharmacist escapes burglar death charge. This is Auckland, Mount Albert pharmacist, actually, Grant Gillard. He had a criminal in his pharmacy when he opened it up in the morning. I think it was last year, last August. And he's been broken into a bunch of times. He goes in there and discovers that the bad guy is still in the goddamn place. Bruce Ellen Jones, aged 46. They engage in a bit of a struggle, a bit of a fight. And Gillard, he's in his 60s. I think he might even be in his late 60s.
Yeah.
Manages to get this sucker in a headlock. Hopefully he wasn't using a Vodafone. Because while he was on the phone to the police, he was restraining this guy. The police arrive. Gillard lets the guy go, and he falls on the ground dead. This 68-year-old pharmacist managed to kill a career criminal. And I'm in two minds about this, because I don't think that a burglar deserves to die for his crimes. But I also think that, a person...
The world's a better place for it.
Well, I'm not going to go that far. But I will say that Grant Gillard had a right to defend himself. And the police seem to agree, because they're not charging him with anything. Nothing at all.
It's a pretty interesting case, because I think that you all look at it and think it's the right result.
Yep.
You know, this is what seems right. But it also, I think there's also a little bit of surprise, because it doesn't seem to be what usually happens.
Yeah.
You know, because there's the right to defend yourself. But
does that go as far as killing
does
someone?
Does it go as far as killing someone? Yeah. You know, especially, I don't remember just how threatening this guy was.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's obvious that it wasn't murder. It's not like Gillard was there to murder him. You know, that's without question. But it was obviously self-defense.
Yeah.
But it seems like the sort of thing where you wouldn't get off, and you know the public would be, you know, there'd be a bit of an outcry saying, oh, you know, this isn't right, but you get a small sentence, like a kind of a slap on the wrist.
If he had put him in a headlock and then given him a lethal injection of insulin, that would be a different matter. If he'd put him in a headlock and then pounded his head against a wall until he died, then maybe we'd expect, you know, some charges of some kind. I don't know what.
That's a good point.
I guess a lot of it came down to the intent of the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He obviously, I don't know a hell of a lot about the case, but it appears to me that he didn't intend to kill him. He was just trying to restrain him until the police arrived.
Yeah,
that's right.
It says here he died of apparently from cardiac arrest. So, you know, either that is the
what you always die of.
Insulin injection, or it is, you know, he had a weak heart, and so it wasn't, it wasn't like he was holding him in a headlock and cutting off his windpipe or something.
Who's going to be a better poisoner than a pharmacist?
Well, exactly.
Opportunity,
yes. Yeah. Motive.
Yeah, he's accidentally headlocked to death 15 burglars in the last 12 years. this guy was a bad customer. He'd been in jail, you know, several times, it sounds like. It doesn't sound like he had any convictions for violent crimes, but he did have a 30-month sentence for causing a fatal car crash in 2002 while high on cannabis, methadone, and tranquilizers. So dude was a fucking scumbag. I just swore for the second time, but I think this guy deserves it. So that's a good news story. You know what else is a good news story? Actually, this is not a good news story. This is just a story. Gentlemen, sex or booze?
Right now?
Make your selection.
I'm reaching for the booze.
Fair call. I'll put my pants back on.
You have two kids, Cal, don't you?
Well, that's right. So, you know, it's time for something new. Maybe it's this premium cider from South Africa.
How do you feel about that cider?
Do you know, I completely forgot I was drinking it. Yeah. When I reached down beside the couch before, I picked up the other bottle that I've been drinking an hour before, and I didn't really notice any difference. So it hasn't left much of a mark. Hey, thanks, though. I really liked it.
this show brought to you by whatever the hell that cider is.
Yeah, not very memorable.
Not very memorable.
No.
If I had the pear cider,
I would remember because I hate pear.
All right, well, I'll keep that in mind when it's time for your birthday.
Thank you.
So this Research New Zealand survey that spoke to, I don't know how many people, 500? Found that, oh God, so many hilarious things. Well, Kiwis in general prefer to have some sex than to have a drink, which actually I think, you know, it's a good result and an obvious result probably. Do you remember Jerex found that New Zealand women are the sluttiest women in the world?
Yeah.
I don't mean sluttiest. I mean,
in the nicest possible
poorest
way. Yeah.
It's good for Kiwi men, except that I think mainly it's like German backpackers and stuff. That
good for tourism, obviously.
All the benefits. Yeah, it's great for tourism to have our women have more sex than any others in the world. Actually, no, I don't know that they have more sex than any others in the world. They just have more sexual partners than any others in the world. And there might be a reason for that. Maybe New Zealand husbands are lazy in the bed.
Maybe that's true, but we do like our booze.
So a fifth of women and a tenth of men would rather have a drink than have sex, which probably means they're alcoholics. Even worse, 4% of people in this survey said they would rather give up all their friends than stop drinking.
Which is kind of the problem with the survey, is it makes me wonder if someone asks you this question, which I presume is a phone survey or something like that, is you know, what percentage of people are going to answer the question seriously?
Yeah.
Because it's kind of ridiculous. I don't know whether these 4% of people openly said, hey, and by the way, I'd give up all of my friends to have a drink, or whether that was a question.
Yeah.
And you'd say, yeah, I'd give up all my friends.
I mean, because that's nearly 1 in 20.
Yeah.
That is a hell of a lot.
It seems a bit strange. I think, you know, if you're thinking about drinking problems, the first step is what, acknowledging you've got a problem?
Yeah.
It seems that if you're answering that kind of question, you've got to say that with a laugh, surely. I mean, I guess if you haven't at that point acknowledged you've got a problem, then you've got a problem.
So did anyone know? Now, this survey, I think, was conducted by Research New Zealand to help, I don't know, something to do with Drug Foundation's FabFast campaign, which I hadn't even heard of. Apparently, they want to encourage people to abstain from alcohol for February.
It's a bit of a walkover, really, because the shortest month.
Yeah, it's lazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's lazy. That's right. And it's like November.
And it's 1 month.
30 days.
I mean, the people that need to abstain from alcohol need to abstain from alcohol for the rest of their damn lives.
Probably if you go a month.
If you go a month, you just don't need to drink.
It does seem like alcoholics need to get off it, doesn't it? Because they seem to get right off it, otherwise they get back on it.
There's only two kinds of people that definitely need to not have a drink. Pregnant women, alcoholics.
Yeah.
73% of people would consider giving up alcohol for more than a month, which seems, you know, pretty reasonable. 92% of men and 80% of women would rather have sex than a drink. So there's the ratios. It's a bit of a cliche, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit of a cliche. And 73% of people sort of considering giving up alcohol for more than a month.
Yeah.
It all seems...
There's all sorts of things I would consider doing.
Yeah, that's right. It just seems like it hasn't been taken seriously.
Yeah. I considered earlier today what it would be like to chop off my penis.
Really?
There's not much chance that I would actually do it. I was thinking, I wonder if I cut off my... I mean, because I've got a really sharp knife in there. It would go through smoothly. I'd have a very clean cut on that thing. I imagine there'd be a lot of blood coming out. I'm not very far from the hospital, but I don't think I'd be able to drive myself there. And, I mean, I'm hoping if they could fix that guy Bobbitt's cock, which was lying by the side of the road...
Yeah.
And he's since gone on to appear in really terrible pornography. I mean, I'm sure that they can stitch my one back on.
I would just collect some stem cells from the stub and spray one back on.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
That would be pretty awesome.
That'd be so awesome.
Unfortunately, it'd just be skin stem cells, and so it'd just grow.
Be like a sausage.
Over the end. Like a little saveloy. I wouldn't be a fan of that, actually. That would be really bad. But so I decided that I wouldn't actually cut off my penis, but I did briefly consider it.
And then you had a drink.
And then I had four drinks.
Yeah.
And then I had a
which
sandwich.
Which did you prefer?
I didn't actually have a drink at the time.
No.
What I preferred was having a sandwich.
Maybe that's the survey they should do next time.
Yeah. Why is Morgan so fat? Because he prefers to have a sandwich to pretty much anything. Wouldn't say no to a sandwich, ladies and gentlemen, if you've got one, a big one, preferably.
Well, as this is a Sal's pizza, just fold it in half.
Fold it over. Pretend it's a calzone.
Yeah.
Have we got any more stories? Oh, we've got no more IP addresses. Isn't that exciting? It's not like we haven't got the IP addresses we've already got, but all of the slash eights, which I'm not going to bother explaining them to everyone.
Everyone knows.
All the class A networks of IP address ranges have been distributed.
Ones, all the good ones have gone.
Yep.
It's. I think that this is one of these things. You know, we've been ignoring this for 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, we've known about this problem for a really long time. We've known what the solution was for a really long time. It's just that the solution kind of sucks. And we didn't really think there was a problem. And even now that we've officially run out of address space to be allocated, and Australia Pacific is the network predicted to run out midway through 2011,
yeah.
I still don't think that we know what that means.
I think it doesn't mean much because many of these IP addresses are actually not externally accessible. They're like ISP ranges, and they can just change to doing some tricky...
Well.
NAT sort of
can
stuff.
Can they though? They can't easily. Like you can't just sort of change that overnight. I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I mean,
what happens is that we have no choice but to move to IPv6. IPv4 provided us with 4 billion IP addresses. IPv6 provides us with 1,000 trillion addresses, but they're really ugly. They're too long.
Hmm.
And I mean, I don't know about you, but I once upon a time worked on an internet service provider's help desk. Reading out an IPv6 address to someone over the phone would just be the end of the goddamn world. I can't imagine it. Well, I mean, people didn't get IP addresses right, and it's 12 numbers. It's very simple.
You know, the one of the things that saved us from the IPv4 running out for so long was the CIDR addressing, where you get private addresses. And one of the things which has really started to suck the IPv4 space has been all of these permanent broadband connections.
Yeah.
And all of that. It's really interesting that ISPs weren't set up from the beginning to allocate private IPs to all of their customers. I mean, if you get a mobile phone, you've always got a private IP on your mobile phone. They don't allocate, Vodafone doesn't allocate you a public IP.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting that ISPs have always allocated public IPs. Mm. And, I kind of half wonder, slightly disappointedly, if we're not going to kind of solve this problem. ISPs are going to kind of reclaim IP addresses by basically transparently shifting half of their customers onto the 10 class A. I mean, no big deal.
Yeah. Well, Cisco's been using it.
Hmm.
Cisco have been using 10 dot.
10 is one of one of the private ones. So, anyone can use 10.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I see happening. I mean, we've already got transparent proxies. Leighton, you like transparent proxies, don't you?
Do you like them a great deal?
I was just listening to this and thinking, oh fuck, here we go.
That's what's going to happen,
ISPs
though, right?
Implementing something like this and breaking all these servers that people are running on their DSL, and
it
would just be a nightmare. It's like
you can still get a static IP, but just that most people don't need.
But it's not a public IP, so it's not internet. Not routable on the internet. Well,
if you sign up for a static IP, then they give you a public routable IP. But
yes, but it's kind of painful. I mean,
it does break some things, doesn't it? It's really only
going to delay the problem, and that's kind of what we've been doing for years and years, is just delaying and delaying the things like NAT. And it's kind of like at some point you're just going to bite the bullet and switch to V6.
Can you believe it would
happen?
It's a real
chicken and the egg situation, though, because I mean, no one's going to implement IPv6 services if people on broadband connections don't have IPv6 native or a way of tunneling. So it's kind of like it's up to the ISPs really to drive the uptake of V6.
Yeah, and so
no one else can do anything really until that's done.
And in fact, if you're talking about customers and you've got a router in your house, and if it's not IPv6 compatible, then your future is a natted future.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to be natted for six anyway. Yeah. So, I mean, I just think, you know, it's a real shame, but I think that, you know, the way the economics fall is that, you know, ISPs will get, you know, will just look at their network and say, okay, we need some more IPs to allocate to static customers, you know, to co-location, to, you know, to whatever. We'll just nat our huge bank of IPs that we currently allocate to all these broadband customers who surf the net and, you know, watch a bit of YouTube. Mm. And I mean, that just seems inevitable. But, I mean, you know, wouldn't it be fantastic if we went for IPv6?
And, you know, they could possibly do that intelligently. Just a quick survey to see which IP addresses get a lot of inbound connections. Don't net those ones. That'll be a tiny minority.
Mm, I think they'll see it as an opportunity to charge more for services where you're accepting inbound connections.
Well, not long ago, you had to pay extra for an IP address. When's the last time you did it? I mean, I get one. I just get one. I'm given one. But I mean,
no,
I remember.
It's not a static IP.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah, it's never changed.
Turn off your modem for a few hours. Maybe it will change.
Oh, I have. I turned it off when I was in Japan. I turned it off for, you know, a week and a half.
Really?
Came back to the same IP address. Yeah, okay. It never changes. I think it's allocated in their database or something.
Mm, that's interesting. Yeah. They're obviously keeping an eye on you.
Probably.
I'll just close down.
When I trace route, it goes through carnivore.gcsb.govt.nz.
That's totally cool.
Yeah, that's totally cool.
That's an accelerator, web accelerator.
Right, it makes it much better. Yeah. Oh, there's a great story, actually. I haven't got it handy. About there's a kind of encoding that you can apply, some kind of screen that you can apply to your images, which, if they are recompressed in any respect, makes text that was invisible and encoded into it become visible. So if you have, if you're on a transparent proxy which recompresses your images, or if the images have been edited and resaved, they immediately get a message display over the top of them, no matter what software you use. It's an incredible story. I'll put it in the show notes.
That's pretty cool.
It is really cool. I'll show you the picture. It's hilarious.
But people, you know, on mobile devices, and I think with some ISPs you can sign up for this, right, and get a transparent proxy which recompresses your images, which makes your connection faster. I can't imagine how scalable that is.
I use on my phone, I use Opera, and I actually like to use Opera because they do that.
Right,
and minimize the traffic.
Opera does that, yeah, but they do that at their place,
yep,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's weird.
Yeah, and I would never go to my bank. Yeah. I'd never go to my bank using that, which means, you know, my phone probably needs change, actually, to be honest. But, you know, the one I stole, I haven't got in my hand yet.
Hmm. I mean, in theory, these transparent proxies are really good, but a good idea.
Yeah.
You look at the one that Telstra implemented, and there's some real problems with that. I came across it just last night trying to distribute an update to an ad hoc app to someone who was running on a Telstra Clear connection, and it was just serving up stale binaries, even though the server's set to not cache any of that stuff, and it was just causing all sorts of problems. So in the end, you ended up having to tether over Vodafone to get this file updated file to download properly because the proxy was just fucking it up.
Over what, sorry?
Over Vodafone.
Golly.
Who themselves run a yeah?
We'll edit that out. That's cool.
I'm sure you didn't mean Vodafone. You meant something else.
Sorry.
I'm always going to have a warm place in my heart for proxies. Not transparent in this case, because my first internet connection was I stole it from an ISP. I was a naughty hacker. They let you dial into their modem banks. This was iProlink in, I don't know, 1994 or something, and they let you browse their local network and their website gratis, but their network included their proxy server. Oh, so of course, what I did was just browse through their proxy server, which meant I had free internet in 1994. Thank you very much.
Because that was $10 a megabyte back then. I signed on to iProlink, but I had no idea.
You were subsidizing me. Thank you very much, sir.
Oh, well, I signed on for free and I browsed their stuff and I thought, well, that's too expensive.
Right. Yeah.
What am I? I'm a high school student.
And then, I'm almost immediately changed over to... paying with iHug.
Yeah.
I don't remember why I did that. Maybe you could only stay connected for 30 minutes at a time or something with the iProlink thing, which would probably be a little bit inconvenient when the download rates meant that everything had to take quite a long time to come in.
Yeah.
There was an app that I, not an app, there was a website that I found back then which built this bizarre matrix of images together. And I'm not going to be able to describe it to you because it was weird. I've never been able to re-find it, and it was just incredible. Incredible for 1994 and 1995. Anyway.
Images of what?
I don't even remember how it worked. They just kind of grabbed an array of images that it found on the web and just sort of glommed them together, and it seemed to like clear cut bits and kind of, oh, geez, it was amazing.
One of my favorites scripts was the Backwards website. Yeah. I think it was based on, you know, the Red Dwarf idea from season 3, episode 1. It's where you put in a URL into the website, and it would go and fetch all of the text, reverse it, but it would also fetch the images and flip them horizontally, so it would flip the whole website. That's fantastic.
I love that kind of thing.
People had time back in the day.
Yeah, and they still do, because you can still get plugins for your browser that, you know, turn everything into Klingon or Nerd Talk or, you know, LeetSpeak or whatever. Christ. Yeah, I know. What? Great stuff.
Those are cool. Every time I start up Chrome, I get offered Chrome Games.
What the hell is Chrome Games?
I don't know.
Why have I never been offered that? I'm an avid Chrome user.
Well, I only use Chrome for my accounting software and for my time tracking software, so it seems very inappropriate.
Why don't you use it for other things? Chrome is so good. Do you use Safari or Firefox?
I use Firefox.
Oh, right. I got tired of the constant update suggestions.
I get tired of the fact that when you close it to install some software that needs it to be closed, that it takes a quarter of an hour to close. Like, that's not funny.
All right, this show, speaking of quarter of an hour, has been running on very long, and I think it's good stuff, and I'm really enjoying this conversation, but we need to bring the show to a close for the week. So, Carl, I hope you're in the document. You've never gone through all of this stuff. Have you got any new projects or apps or anything that you want to plug?
You know, I'm in the difficult situation of having a bunch of apps that I want to plug, but I can't talk about them yet.
Oh, no.
It's a little bit too early. But we're working on some really exciting stuff. This is fantastic.
Right.
Yeah, to know about it. But
we've got some
exciting things. So we're going down to Webstock, to the Onyas, and we're a finalist for the North and South mobile app.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. That worked on. Gary and I and Mike and Matt at work all worked on that. So that's pretty exciting.
That's really
cool. Check that out if you like magazines, because, you know, I mean, there's a lot of talk about magazines at the moment, because the daily magazine.
It's got no chance.
Have you guys had a look at the Daily thing?
Yeah, I've
this is $30 million.
Had a little
Murdoch's
inside
invested.
Info on this for a few months. One of the guys in the office has actually been working on the back end. Back-end systems powering the Daily. So I got to see it about 3 weeks ago. Hmm. At that point, it was the iPad app was just unbelievably flaky and really bad performance. And I don't know, they did a lot in the 2 weeks before they launched it, but they were kind of forced into launching it early, I think, with the
$3
million Super Bowl app they had booked.
Right.
So they had no choice but to sort of ship it before it was ready. I see a few hours ago an update just come through for it. So I haven't downloaded that yet and see what they've done. But I don't know. It has been, the performance has been really bad, and it's been crashing, obviously. But I think it's an interesting, knowing the back-end systems that they've built to power this app, it's kind of, you can see that they've taken a clean slate approach to it, and it's got potential. It just hasn't, it was just launched before it was ready, I think.
Mm. It's the sort of thing that you want to see succeed on the platform, because, you know, you want to see people creating content for the platform. But, if it was released a little bit too early.
At this point, the iPad app just isn't implemented as well as it needs to be.
Yeah.
And I've heard a lot of people who've used both say that they prefer Flipbook.
Well, Flipbook's very different, I think. It's very social orientated and more about, I guess, what your friends are talking about and posting and stuff. And I guess my question with the Daily was always, what's the content going to be like? It's going to live or die about the content, really, in the long run.
And looked pretty
trivial. I've kind of had a quick browse, and there's some interesting stuff, but I don't know. I'm not a big newspaper sort of person anyway, so it's probably not really targeted towards people like us.
Also, the content at the moment is not is purely international. I mean, it's purely sort of US centric, isn't it? I mean, you're not even really meant to have it here yet. So it's not surprising that you're kind of disconnected. I have been reading quite a bit of news. I actually find that I've been trying to give up reading the news because the news is, kind of depressing. But I'm still kind of quite excited by this thing, and I'll see what happens. It'll be interesting to see when they do a worldwide release.
It's going to fail.
If they do a worldwide release,
I think it's going to be an expensive failure. I think that unless they make,
I don't know. I think the one thing that has got going for it is the subscription stuff. And true subscription stuff.
Yeah, so but you know what it hasn't got going for it? They don't have any links. They don't link out of the app, right? Once you're in, you're in.
They
it's
do.
A walled garden.
Yep. No, you can post links to the stories, and they're freely available on the web.
No, I mean in the when you're in the app,
right?
If they talk about a website, they won't link to it.
I'm not sure. I haven't come across it. I mean,
well, that's
why
criticism that I saw from people who were testing it.
You know what? Like if that's the case, then they can change it. Yeah. I mean, and I think that's kind of the critical thing for these sorts of things is that, maybe they launch too soon because it's kind of quite important to launch with your A game and this kind of thing. But if they've launched with a beta, then they'll improve it, and we'll see what it's like.
Yeah, no doubt.
I just don't really see the point in these apps, to be honest. I'm quite happy to browse the web and read stories or get all my news on the web. I mean, the web browser is perfect for that.
Yeah, me too.
I don't see this fascination with trying to make these sort of magazine/newspaper PDF readers, essentially.
Except North and South, which I've heard is extremely good.
Well, it is, yeah.
So, Leighton or David, does either of you have any projects or anything that you want to plug?
I've got a huge beta release coming up. Hopefully the end of this week.
Yep.
For Airforms, which is our big product that we've been working on for about a year and a half now. It's kind of been the only thing on. And so hopefully getting the first beta out to a few hundred people on Thursday night.
And
all going to plan.
Presumably that's something that people need to sign up for. Can they still sign up? And where would they do that if they can?
It's too late now, unfortunately. I've got all the ad hoc allocations that we get from Apple.
What a great
plug. So we can't take a few more, unfortunately. It's kind of a specialized app anyway. It's really the whole concept of the app is really a way for the small to medium businesses to get access to their databases on the go without having to spend hundreds of thousands contracting an app developer to write a custom app for them. So it's,
I hope it's really expensive then.
Sorry, what was that?
I hope you're charging a lot for it. Are you charging the right amount? Certainly.
It won't be a 1990 app.
No, I hope not. I mean, if it actually has that value to people, and if the alternative is hundreds of thousands of dollars, I hope that it's not even $10. Twitter addresses at Avon.
Yep, still.
Still, until they offer you big money.
No comment.
Would it be Huffington Post?
Did you say $300?
$300 mil, I think.
Nothing north of $300.
At Polar Bear Farm for Leighton. At, I think it's Magic Dave, isn't it? With a J, Magic Dave.
That's right.
I'm not going to read a mailbag because I can't be bothered. I'm not going to do any corrections because we're fucking perfect. That's my third swear. Excuse me. That was a mistake. I regret it.
Any audio feedback from last week?
Actually, I got something. Not audio feedback, but someone said they hated my guts and wanted me to die.
Yeah, but then I came on the show, so I thought that was...
Oh, speaking of that, have you seen this latest story about Zuckerberg stalker?
Yep. This Tell me about it.
Kind of creepy. I'm just trying to find the link here. But there's this 31-year-old Indian guy who has been stalking Mark Zuckerberg and leaving all sorts of crazy messages on his Facebook page. He actually showed up to his home one day with flowers and chocolates
and got escorted off the property. And now Zuckerberg's taken out a restraining order on the guy.
The poor sap. Does he not realize that Zuck isn't gay? What a doofus.
I don't know what was going on, but it just seemed creepy.
Well, he shouldn't have put his address on his Facebook page.
No, which was then hacked.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of not putting an address on a page, I don't actually know where the address is, but it's the Wellington Town Hall. I'm talking about the still hypothetical live show that we may or may not do in Wellington. It now sounds, if it does happen, it's going to be only open to people who are at Webstock, unfortunately. So other Wellington listeners, you're probably out of luck. If it does happen, it's going to be awesome. Absolutely.
Let's go. And if it does happen... I'm going to be there. Leighton and Dave, you're coming to Webstock, aren't you?
Yeah, I'll be there.
If it does happen, it'll be at Webstock, and so the people that can go, I'll be able to tell.
And it's recorded live, but it's not live.
It won't be streamed live, so it will be edited for the listeners. It'll be released like a normal episode.
Crowd noise will be added.
I'll fake it.
Yeah.
As always, if you wish, you can check the site for the show notes. I strongly recommend you do that. They are a little bit more limited lately because I'm trying to cut down the amount of time I'm spending on this goddamn show. Instead of 20 hours a week, I'm getting it down to about 8 or 10. If you have feedback, send email to comments@discourse.co.nz. You'll never do that. Go to the talkback page on the site, but you won't do that, or Twitter us, and you probably will do that. We get a lot of those, and we're really grateful. Please tell a friend about the show. We have experienced a little surge of growth since we started begging you to do that, and I want more. I want more growth. I want more surging. I want swellings of our audience. I really appreciate it. David Frampton, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Leighton Duncan, thank you for joining us.
Pleasure to be on, New Zealand's self-appointed top comedy/tech podcast.
It's not really self-appointed. We were not the first to describe ourselves as that. A listener was the first to describe us as that.
Ah.
And it's since been confirmed by many others who say that we are...
Verified.
We are certainly second favourite, but not news... not second favourite global podcast, right? Up against, you know, such august shows as MacBreak Weekly and... Buzz Out Loud and Twit and Judge John Hodgman. Actually, people who say we're second favorite probably haven't heard Judge John Hodgman. That would definitely push us to third.
Oh, look, it's the only podcast I listen to.
Or Merlin Mann's Back to Work. If you haven't heard Merlin Mann's Back to Work or Judge John Hodgman, well, you should definitely check out Judge John Hodgman. But we were almost out of the show. Carl, thank you very much for coming along to Studio One and doing the stellar job you have of being my special guest star co-host.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And listeners, thank you once again for listening. I love you so much. I'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Weekly Show on... Sorry. With course.
All right, we're using that one.